Sharing Our Mother's Stories. 7 years ago, a small group of Maine women first met each other at a writing workshop sponsored by the Maine Writers and Publishers Alliance called Discovering Our Mother's Stories. As it turned out, that one workshop was just the beginning of a years-long collaboration. Five of the women there became each other's confidants, cheerleaders, and editors. And the result of their work together is a book, Compassionate Journey, Honoring Our Mother's Stories, a deep and honest anthology of stories about their mothers. I'm Jennifer Rooks. On this Mother's Day weekend, we'll talk with these authors and learn how they came to think of their mothers differently by writing about them. We would also love to hear your stories about your mother. Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. In celebration of Mother's Day, we are talking with some women authors today about their book, Compassionate Journey, Honoring Our Mother's Stories. It compiles the tales of each writer's mother and explores how we can all try to understand our mothers as complex individuals with their own struggles and joys. We talk with some of those authors today. Joining me in the studio, Maggie Butler, who is a writer and retired psychotherapist. She has written award-winning screenplays, fiction, and poetry, and she leads creative writing workshops. Cheryl Gillespie is here. She's a retired English teacher and writer of fiction and nonfiction. And Jane Sloven is a psychotherapist and retired attorney, and she has written short stories, poetry, and a mystery novel. Jane, did I pronounce your last name correctly?
You did.
Oh, good. As always, we want to hear from you. Do you have a story to share about your mother? How did she influence you? Has becoming a parent yourself changed your views of your mom? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Welcome to all of you. Jane, before we hear the stories that are in the book, I want to hear the story of the book. How did this come to be? You all met 7 years ago.
We met in May of 2012 at a workshop that was led by Pat Taub, who is the author of a small book, The Mother of My Invention. And she was leading a workshop, Discovering Our Mother's Stories. It was sponsored by Maine Writers and Publishers Alliance, an organization that all of us belong to. And it was a very provocative workshop. She asked us to look at our mothers from a different perspective, to look at them as the women they were before they became our mothers, and to, through writing, begin to think about them from the perspective of all the things that form them as women, the social factors that form them, political factors, family history, and how all of those factors made them the women they were before they were our mothers, and how those factors impacted the way they mothered us.
So, Maggie, that's 7 years ago. And I'm guessing the workshop got over, after a week or two.
In an afternoon.
It was one afternoon. So how did one afternoon turn into this anthology?
As Jane said, the questions were quite provocative. And we left and sort of lingered outside for a while. There were a group of us that chatted together. And it just barely scratched the surface. And so we decided, well, yeah, I mean, it's a long story. I'm giving you the short story. We decided we would continue to meet as a group. There were several other women that were invited to join us, and eventually it ended up just the five of us. And I would like to mention that there is one author who can't be with us today, and that's Martha Rice, who had some knee surgery. So we send our best to her, and we let everybody know that Martha Rice is also one of the authors.
All right. And you all came from all over Maine. This is not, it wasn't so easy. It was an effort to get together and meet, right, Cheryl?
Well, yeah, actually, Jane and I live close together. That was quite easy. Yes, Jenny Ratzma drove down from Fort Kent where she is director of nursing at University of Maine at Fort Kent. And Maggie was sometimes with us and sometimes in Dublin, being a dual citizen. It was sometimes an effort, but the group fit me to a T. I had been writing about my mother forever, so I was glad to be in the group.
All right. And so you all live in the Western Maine Mountains?
No. I live in Portland. Cheryl's in Falmouth.
Oh, so I thought you wrote for the Bethel magazine.
Condo at Sunday River.
Okay. Yes. Okay. So let's hear about the stories. And who wants to go first? Who wants to talk about discovering their mother?
Mm. I'll go first. Okay. I had been writing about my mother for years. My mother was considered a challenging person, a quirky person. Nobody whispered the words mental illness. I lost her over 30 years ago, and I had been investigating. And with the support of this lovely group, I actually sent away for her records from her time in Augusta State Hospital, a psychiatric unit in Augusta. And my portion of the book is about, you know, studying what actually happened with my mother and trying to come to peace with it.
And it sounds it's very shocking from today's perspective.
Yes. People never talked about it, and when we do readings, I always every reading or interaction there's someone who comes up and said, "My mother was ill too," and so forth, and they start talking about that. So even now, it is still something that people are hesitant to speak openly about.
Yeah, as a little girl, that was a shame that was placed on you because there was such a stigma of mental illness.
We didn't even say the words out loud, you know. It was all hush-hush, you know, and so forth. So, but that's how we handled it back then.
In sending off for her records and writing this, would you call it chapter, in the story in the book, what did that do for you?
Oh, it helped me tremendously. I now talk openly about it. I have made a network of friends who you know, came back. I had one friend who said, you know, my mother was in Bangor State Hospital. She wasn't away helping a relative, you know, and now we can talk openly about it. So it has helped me a great deal.
Jane, it seems to me that many of these stories, including your mother's, involved what we would today call mental illness, but were not called that then. And it sounds to me as though your mother suffered depression.
She did suffer depression, but she also had a lineage of trauma because her mother and her grandparents and her two uncles left Russia in a very immediate way. They needed to leave overnight because they were told they were going to be killed. And as Jews, there were often pogroms in Russia, which is where they were from. And that lineage carried along and carried through to her, so that there was a ubiquitous anxiety and depression that I think she dealt with throughout her life. She made the most of her circumstances in that she also grew up in this very small town where she was considered a hick. And she moved to New York and to Long Island, New York. And she had a great talent for decorating on a budget, going to antique shops and junk shops and picking things up and transforming furniture and for creating a beautiful home, for baking and cooking and entertaining. She was very bright. She was a volunteer in the community. She did a lot within the Jewish community as well.
You're speaking with her in such glowing terms, but a while ago that wouldn't have been the case, would it have been?
That's true. My mother was all of those things, and she was also, for me, a very difficult mother. We had a very complicated relationship. She had a tendency to see the world as made up of victims and persecutors. And you could fall into one of those categories and be trapped in that. And we had, I think, a very close relationship for the early part of my life. But after my father died, my mother was very angry because he died after having canceled some insurance policies. And it was very hard to mourn him because she was so angry at him. And that really shifted the balance of our relationship. I ended up sort of the other side of the street as not someone in her corner. And our relationship was very challenging for a long time.
How was writing, what did writing about her do for you?
Writing is such an interesting way into this kind of material. It allowed me to really distance from her and from the relationship of mother and daughter, and to look at her as an individual with all the skills that she had and all the talents that she had and all the difficulties that she had, and to see myself differently in relationship to her. So when we titled this Compassionate Journey, it's because we all came to a much more compassionate place in looking at our mothers and understanding their behavior and understanding ourselves as well.
Maggie, your mother also had a really, really, really rough childhood, it sounds like. The stories of having to go out as a little girl and collect her brother who was drinking at bars in dangerous places. It's something from a Dickens novel or something.
And it was something that she did without question, because her relationship with her mother was such that she was a good girl and she did what she was told. You know, she wanted to please her mother. I'd like to interject very quickly here at this point that I'm glad that Jane is already mentioned, so that the listeners can know that, you know, this isn't all sadness and it isn't all pain. Although many relationships, mother-daughter relationships, have them, there certainly were those factors in my relationship with my mother. But I worked through a lot through the writing. And I think as a mother myself, one of the things that I wish most is that my daughters will be able to, at some point in their life, say, you know, my mother did the best that she could. And I want them to understand me within the context that I grew up and in the home I grew up. And then I realized I needed to accept that challenge from my own mother. There is a lot to be angry about, and I was for a long time. I think I even wrote that, you know, I had a lot of righteous and justifiable anger. But, you know, it doesn't get you anywhere. And I moved from a place of feeling compassion toward my mother, which I thought I had way more of than I did, because then when I got involved in this, I realized, whoa, I don't have as much as I thought I did, and needed to stop the writing for a while. And I'm a psychotherapist myself, but knew I needed to go back into therapy for myself and do some work.
Mm. It's interesting to me because all of the lives that are represented in this book, Compassionate Journey, are real. You know, it's real life. And do you think maybe part of coming to terms with your individual relationships with your mothers and their stories is coming to terms with this fact that real life isn't what we put motherhood up to be, this vaunted ideal that for some reason seems to go throughout the generations, that this is how it's supposed to be, and somehow my family is the one that's different.
Exactly. It's not a Hallmark Mother's Day card. You know, real life, those relationships that we have, they're not Hallmark Mother's Day cards, but they are stories of love and they are stories of forgiveness.
Maggie, you say that writing this was like an outward bound experience.
It was. For me, it was, yeah. Because I did have to go back into therapy and work some things through. And fortunately, miraculously for me, I moved back to a place of compassion. And then to a place of empathy and as a therapist, we all, and anyone who's been, you know, you put your feet in someone else's shoes. I was able to do that and look at who this woman was who adopted me, and then eventually came to a place of forgiveness, which I never thought was possible.
One of the lovely things about your book is that you provide a guide for others who might like to experience this journey. And I want to ask you what you would say to someone who's saying, why? Why ought to I take this time and this energy and this, you know, sort of psychic exploration and try to do this myself?
Well, I don't even think why anymore. After now that the book is out and I've had some interaction with readers, it just goes immediately to what can I do to understand my relationship with my mother better. Last month, I had a young woman in her 20s come up and tell me, my mother suffers some mental illness. Sometimes I hate her, and then I feel guilty. You know, so, the idea of getting in a group and either discussion or the writing process, which I think is actually very therapeutic, is very inviting for, you know, people who come to our book and then are worried about their own relationship with their mother. I too, work through a lot of anger with my mother. When she died, we weren't speaking. I think the toolkit that is in the back of the book is a wonderful guide for women who have some issues.
Did you all always know you would publish? And if not, was it kind of a difficult conversation to decide whether or not to put these stories out for the world to see?
We knew that our intention when we formed this group was to write our mother's stories and to create a guide for other women. We thought that there hadn't really been, although there are so many books with essays about mothers, we didn't really think, other than Pat's book that was her autobiography, that there were many books with these kinds of essays that also offered other women a way to do this kind of work themselves. And so it was our intention when we started this group that that's what we were going to do, that we were going to do the writing and that we were going to create an anthology that was publishable and that not only would tell our stories, but would offer something to readers who wanted to take the same kind of a path.
All right. Well, when we come back, we're going to talk with another one of the authors in the book, and we'll also hear from you, Maggie, about the fifth author. If you'd like to tell part of your mother's story, if you'd like to talk to these women who have written this lovely book, Compassionate Journey, give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. You can email us at talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does Evergreen Home Performance, dedicated to helping homeowners qualify for Efficiency Maine Energy Audit and Insulation Rebates. More at evergreenyourhome.com. Maine Health, a network of hospitals, healthcare providers, and specialists built with your needs at the very center. MaineHealth.org. And Marshall Communications, with Nancy Marshall's PR Maven podcast, offering advice on building your brand and network. MarshallPR.com.
Miranda Dinda used to believe false claims that vaccines could harm her child. She doesn't anymore.
It seemed like I had just found this secret information that only some people come across, and I thought, why would I not use this information?
How we know what's true, this week on Hidden Brain from NPR.
Hidden Brain is Sunday morning at 11 here on Maine Public Radio. Thank you for helping to keep public radio strong here in Maine. Our Let's Grow Together spring membership drive is over and done with, but Maine Public Radio and Maine Public Classical are strong and well-positioned to do what they do each and every day into the months ahead. Public radio wouldn't be public radio without the public's, your support. Together, we raised over $260,000 and welcomed in 365 new members. Thanks for doing your part. It makes a difference.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, we are talking about the role that mothers play in our lives. Joining me are three of the authors of a book about mothers. Cheryl Gillespie is a retired English teacher and writer of fiction and nonfiction. Jane Slovin is a psychotherapist and retired attorney and writer, and Maggie Butler, a retired psychotherapist and award-winning writer. We invite you to join the conversation. Share your mother's story. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Joining us on the line now is Jenny Radsma. She is one of the authors of Compassionate Journey. She is a writer and also a nursing professor, and she lives in Fort Kent. Thanks for calling in, Jenny.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Jennifer. I'm so pleased to be able to join you on your program.
Oh, Jenny, you've done a little driving to do your part for this book, I take it.
Well, a few times, but we should also add that we also did some use the beauty of technology. So we Skyped or Zoomed a number of meetings, which saved me from having to make frequent as many trips to Portland as I would otherwise have had to do. So that worked well, and then of course email as well.
Tell us about your mother's story. Tell us what you would like us to know about your mom.
Well, I wrote the story about my mother in particular because it started with that workshop. But my mother and father immigrated from the Netherlands to Canada, and what I realized, as I got into my late adulthood, past that middle age point, that all I grew up in this Dutch environment. Everybody had a Dutch accent, and the stories were all the same among all these people. And now I'm aware these are people who have all died, and these stories and this immigration experience is it was a bubble in time, but unless it's documented, it's lost. And so I wanted to capture that, and then in particular my mother, because I wanted to capture my mother's story. She was very reserved, and didn't like to draw attention to herself. And so the temptation, I think, is for people like my mother is to say they're ordinary, and I've really come to realize there's no such thing as an ordinary person, and everybody has a story. So it was a lot of, fun? It was hard work as well to mine the stories that I could recall and that I, my sisters could recall and put them all together in a chapter, like as I did in this book.
A note I have to myself after reading part of your chapter, and this reminds me of something we were talking about with Cheryl, is how many family secrets there are, and what a burden that is for so many children to have to keep them.
Yes, and I think I heard Cheryl and Maggie and Jane talk about this as well. And I think what that does is it's so isolating, and the feeling is that you're the only family going through this. So it's just imperative that you maintain the walls of what you assume is normal, and everything is good and fine. When meanwhile there's just all kinds of fracturing happening within those walls, and only to realize as you get older, that other people were going through the exact same thing, or not necessarily the exact same thing, but similar experiences, and how much better off we would have been if we'd have been able to be more transparent and be able to provide support for one another going through what our respective family situations were.
Jenny, what advice would you give to someone who wants to go through an exploration like the five of you did and write about your mother or your father or your family?
I would say, go for it. I think it's but also be prepared that it is a lot of hard work, and it does conjure up some feelings that sometimes you'd rather leave dormant. And yet, I think, as Maggie said, the rewards for pursuing and persisting are immense in terms of getting to the other side. The redemption and the forgiveness and the understanding and the compassion. I just think it's incredibly important. And I think you learn a lot. I mean, certainly in this case, I learned a lot about my mother in terms of trying to capture as much of my mother within, the pages that I did. But it's also revealing in terms of who I am in the context of who my mother was and how she mothered me and how she mothered our family. So I would say absolutely, go for it, but be prepared for the hard work that it is.
Well, thank you so much for calling in, Jenny. That's Jenny Radsma. She is one of the authors of Compassionate Journey, and she's a nursing professor based in Fort Kent. Okay, so we've done four stories. I understand that Martha can't call in because she's had surgery, but Maggie, you want to tell us a little bit about Martha and about her mother's story.
Yeah, I'll say more about Martha and less about her story because that doesn't feel fair to be talking about her. Anyway, Martha. Martha's writing, I think, is very, we all have a different style of writing, and I think Martha's style, it's really sparkles. Martha is an actress. She's a former college professor. But it's the actress in her when she does her readings that makes her story come alive. She had a very interesting, I think, a very interesting upbringing. Martha is also a splendid writer who has written plays, stage plays, and she also, I will add, was a finalist in one of the main writers. Main Literary Awards a couple of years ago. And I just, that's what I want to say about Martha, to give her some representation. I can't do enough for her, but yeah, her story is very interesting.
We'll go to Wendy, who's calling from Scarborough. Hi, Wendy, go ahead.
Hi. I really want to thank you for presenting this topic here. I hear these women and their stories are very similar to mine. It's very difficult to grow up with a mother with mental illness. You know, I'm 61 years old now, and I do have to say that I have reached a place to where I have such compassion for my mom, who's now dead. But it was really a lot of work, and I was so fearful for so long that I would be just like her. And so it was so helpful for me to have a therapist say, but you have different resources. You know, you are not your mother. And so thank you for these ladies for sharing their stories and helping us, other women out there who have, you know, difficult relationships with their mothers to heal. Thanks.
Yes, I think that's so important. And one of the things, we do live in a different time. A lot of our mothers, their anxiety was dealt with by Librium and Xanax and Valium prescriptions that were handed out like candy by their doctors without any information about what the side effects were from those medications, that they could become more irritable when they stopped taking them. And psychotherapy was not something that was available to our mothers in the way that it was available to us. It was stigmatized. Whereas right now we're sitting here, Maggie and I are both psychotherapists. As therapists, you have to do your own work constantly. Yeah. So, you know, therapy is just natural. It's like drinking juice in the morning. And that allows us to do, to have a different kind of life and to understand things differently, to understand our childhoods differently, and to become the people that we would like to become in a way that was just not available to our mothers.
I understand the fear of the caller. I felt that way too, looked for symptoms in myself of any type of illness, watched both of my daughters like a hawk, and watched nieces, you know, nephew, and so forth and so on. So that fear is very, very real. If you have a relative, you know, with problems like that.
And most people do.
Yeah. Yes. I understand her. My heart goes out to her.
Wendy, thank you for calling in and being part of the program today. We're going to move to Susan in Bowdoin. Hi, Susan. Go ahead.
Jennifer, hi. Thank you for your program, for yourself, and for these amazing women callers. I'm going to segue right in. It's funny, the worst fear, and of course, my grandfather was bipolar. He killed himself in my grandmother's driveway. My mother was bipolar. She died 6 months ago. I am, and my son is. My mother was very, very, very difficult. I'm still angry, though. Again, it's the healing, but interestingly enough, I'll be 63 this year. My mother had spot-on psychiatric care. She was actually at first. She was in psychiatric hospitals for many years, in and out, in and out, in and out. She took lithium. She could be, basically, when I was very little, I considered it the mother I knew and the mother I didn't know, and it was exasperated by the fact that when she married my stepfather when I was nine, my stepfather and all his friends raped me for 4 years.
Oh, God,
and
Susan.
Finally, when she went to her psychiatrist, see, it didn't matter. He told her, and up to 2 weeks before she died, she had lied and said she believed me, and 2 weeks before she goes, you need to know, Susan, that my psychiatrist said that little girls often lie about being raped and sexual abuse. And so I believed him, and I believed your stepfather and not you. There you go. Am I angry? You bet. But I don't blame myself. Oh, my God, this is a woman that had spot-on psychiatric care, so there you go. Don't worry. I'm not actually not angry at you. It's just ironic, isn't it?
Well, Susan, I'm so sorry to hear your story.
I think we do have a way to go in dealing with mental illness. There still are issues. And once again, thank you for sharing your story.
We'll go to Jane calling from VZ. Hi, Jane. Go ahead.
Hi, how are you? I just, you know, this is just a wonderful show, a great format. You do it brilliantly, and thank you. I'm just going to tell you a quick story about my mom. I don't have any credentials except as a daughter. But my mom was born, my mother, Ramona Madeline Whitaker Tripp Livingston, was born in 1914 in Oklahoma Territory. So she was 15 in 1929. So she was part of a generation that grew up without a lot of really big dreams, you know, and pretty pragmatic. And she went into the war, as many young people did. She joined the WACs, as many young people did. And she met my dad, who was a soon-to-be Philadelphia lawyer. Her father was a Southern Baptist preacher. So she entered this world, this whole different world. I mean, like a different planet, I'm sure, to her. And when she realized that my dad had also come back from the war, many men dead, a full-blown alcoholic, as well as a lawyer and workaholic, but she realized she needed to get a job. And she very cleverly, she was very smart, landed a job teaching English at Bryn Mawr College, a very prestigious women's college outside of Philadelphia. And she kept that job, and she kept it for 35 years. The last few years, she was the foreign student advisor, which she found to be really quite fascinating. She developed a great community at Bryn Mawr. She did not leave my father until after 32 years. She finally decided that enough was enough. But she stayed with him all those years and came home every day and cooked dinner and did the whole nine yards like so many, many women do.
Jane, it sounds like you have a great deal of admiration for your mom.
I have tremendous admiration. I got to spend her last 17 years with her here in VZ. She bought a home in VZ after she retired, and I raised my daughter upstairs from her. But I do want to say, because she would want me to, she knew me better than probably anybody in the world, that these wonderful women who we're celebrating today and who we have so much admiration for, partly because they were doing more than their fair share of work, raising the children.
Everybody here is nodding. Yes.
Yeah. So yeah. This is a great thing to do to honor these women, but we also need to liberate ourselves, because many of us would have had very different lives, very, very different lives, if we had been able to share the responsibility of being good parents, because, you know, it takes time, it takes attention, it takes resources. And it takes time. Did I mention time? Yeah.
Right, right. Jane, I appreciate your call. Cheryl.
Thank you for calling in. I do certainly understand the whole idea of the burden, you know, being a lot on the woman.
Maggie.
I want to say hooray for Jane's mother. And she speaks to some of the stories in our book of women who didn't have a lot of opportunity because of what was circumscribed by society in the time, and especially the World War II era. And look what she did. I mean, look what she did. She made a large career for herself against a lot of adversity, but she pushed beyond those borders. Not every woman could.
Jane, thank you for your call. Amy on Facebook writes, my mother was the strongest person I've ever known. She was widowed suddenly while pregnant with me and raised my four older siblings and me entirely on her own. She gave us great childhood memories, solid values, and good educations, and I didn't come to fully appreciate just how strong she was until I was a mother myself. I've been getting to know her better by writing her story in her own voice, and it has been a revelation. I have so enjoyed getting to know Cheryl Gillespie through my monthly writing group and through Cheryl, the other Compassionate Journey writers. So you know Amy.
Yes, hello, Amy. And her story is extraordinary. And it is just fun to work with women writing about bright, extraordinary women.
All right. Well, we're going to take another quick break. You're listening to Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do North Yarmouth Academy, offering summer camp adventures for ages 2 to 15, circus, sports, arts, science, and more. NYA.org. Monson Arts, a nonprofit organization supported by the Libra Foundation, now offering intensive one-week summer workshops. Learn more at MonsonArts.org. And St. Mary's Health System Orthopedics, helping patients live their best lives in motion. Online at findabonedoctorme.org.
What happens to a town's economy when its nuclear plant shuts down?
They estimate that they spend $40,000 a year on pizza. To me, that was a great example of the secondary or tertiary impacts of what a plant like that generates in the community.
On Next, from the New England News Collaborative, the economic and environmental impact of a plant on its hometown.
You know, everything has declined. The fish have gone out further. The vegetation has ceased.
Please join us.
That's coming up today at 2 here on Maine Public Radio.
Next time on the New Yorker Radio Hour, I'll talk with two leading experts about the new sense of urgency, desperation even, about climate change.
The polling last week showed that for Democratic voters anyway, climate change is now far and away the most important issue going into these primaries.
Bill McKibben joins me with Elizabeth Colbert next time on the New Yorker Radio Hour.
That's tomorrow afternoon at 2. And Sunday evening at 11 here on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, Understanding Our Mothers. Joining me, three of the authors of Compassionate Journey, Jane Slovin, Maggie Butler, and Cheryl Gillespie. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. We'll go to Alex calling from Scarborough. Hi, Alex.
Hi, good afternoon, everybody. Thank you for taking my call. Really beautiful show. I really appreciate the topic because I think it's so important that we talk about the truth about how we feel, what we experience. But I wanted to say that I wish I had known years ago that I really didn't need to have expectations of my mother, that my mother was not a cookie cutter person. She had a multiple dimensions, and that as much as she was troubled and maybe troubled us growing up and made some difficult times for me as a child and my sister, I have come full circle and realized that I can have compassion, forgiveness, but I really respect her now. And I want to say that I did a lot of therapy and it never worked out for me because I felt like I was constantly blaming my mother and my family for how I was. And what I found was that 12-step work helped me become more accountable for my own reactions and my own understanding of alcoholism in the family, mental illness, which actually are the same thing. And, you know, that she wasn't treated well. And what's fun is now my mom feels safe enough to talk about some of the things she never could talk about at 79. And that's amazing to me that if we can show them some compassion, maybe they will actually come out and tell us what's been troubling them for decades, you know? So I just want to put that out there, and I can't wait to get the book, and congratulations to you all.
Well,
thank you.
I'm sure that makes our authors happy. Alex, thank you so much for calling. And Jane, Alex is touching on something I know you wanted to talk about, the expectations we have of our mothers.
Yes, although I do want to directly respond to something that Alex said, which is 12-step programs can be fabulous in helping us take responsibility and look at things differently and to stop blaming. I think one of the things that creates problems for everyone is when we idealize motherhood and we idealize our mothers and families and have these expectations that they should be perfect and that we should receive everything that we need from our mothers. We are all human beings. We all struggle with things. We struggle with our histories. We struggle with our circumstances. And I think when we're realistic about that, we can be kinder to our mothers and we can be much kinder to ourselves. And the path of writing as a way into some of this material took us right to those places.
Yeah. I'm going to go to an email from Lenny. My mother left us at age 97 3 years ago. She was a dynamo, an elementary school teacher, farmer, professional, quality seamstress, tap dancer, and very funny and mischievous. There are six of us, and for 8 days in 1961, we five daughters were all teens at once. Wow. Mother also helped to raise many of her 13 siblings. There were conflicts during the teenage years and when mother went through menopause, but as I raised children and aged, I came to understand every moment of it. One happy memory is of her building a stand-up bass using an old washtub, a pole, and a rope, which she played in a teacher's jug band. She attached taps to a pair of shoes and covered them with old sneaker tops. She taught me to be independent and to always seek new opportunities to learn. Lenny, that's lovely. Thank you so much for writing that. Maggie, I want to come back to the idea of the book. And what is some advice that you have to someone who thinks they might like to write an essay or even more about their own mother?
In the book, in the how-to part, there's a question, how do you know if you're ready? And I think the way you know that you are ready is if you're willing to reach beyond the narrative of the mother-daughter story that you have constructed about who your mother is. Because that's based usually with us at the center. It's, you know, how I was done, how she did well by me and how she didn't do well. You know, move beyond the story that you've told yourself about your mother and see, have a desire to look, who is this woman? Who was she? Who was she when she was a little girl? What were her hopes and dreams? And give her the gift of their full personhood.
We'll go to Mark calling from Portland. Hi, Mark. Go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon. Thank you for this amazing topic and making time for us people to call in about our families and background. I want to toss this in. I'm pushing 70, and I had both two mothers and two fathers. Very, very different women. And this is mostly about the difference between what a woman can be when it comes to mothering. My biological mother was born in 1925, and she married at 20 when the boys came back from the war. And a year later, she had her first of her three sons. And that was agreed upon by my mother and father. But my dad, whom I got to know later on very well, and he told me a lot of stuff that had happened in the family, he wanted a second child because in those days, a man who didn't have but one child was looked on as being perhaps impotent or infertile. And so second child was born. That was me. And my mother very quickly took a dislike to having so much child rearing to do. So from the cradle, she decided to not mother me. And the consequence of that was that by the age of three, I was being given a nerve block to stop me from thrashing in my cradle or in my bed at night. Mm. And later on, years and years and thousands of hours and dollars worth of therapy later, I find out that these days they would say that I was the victim of severe infant maternal neglect. And the manifestations would be called something like reactive attachment disorder. Anyway, accident happened and child number three was born, my younger brother. And 2 years later, my mother divorced my father, blaming all her problems on him. and found out that in the late 50s, it was really, really hard for even a very bright woman like she was to earn enough money to support three kids. So she asked for help from her church minister, Dr. Gutsky, the Presbyterian Church, and he referred her to a couple who took in children from families that were having problems and were foster parenting them. And so without any state supervision in the state of Georgia, we were passed in the span of just a couple of months from my mom's care to this other family, a doctor and his wife. She was barren, which was why they had been taking in children. And having not ever been really loved, I have no memory in my entire life of being held by my mother at all. My dad told me that she used to prop me up in the corner of the sofa and arrange so that I could suck from the bottle placed within a mouth reach, like a little mouse getting water from a cage, a bottle in a cage.
Mark, it's such a remarkable story that you're telling about your life.
But listen,
but we're almost to the end of the program.
The foster mother loved me so well, I ended up only partially screwed up, very functionally useful and loving and generous man. And so my foster mother, I took my son back to visit her, and unfortunately she had disappeared into Alzheimer's by that time.
Oh. Well, thank you so much for calling and sharing your story, Mark. And we are talking about mothers today. Cheryl, I know you wanted to say something before we wrapped up today.
Yes, I did. As it is Mother's Day this Sunday, I think we all wanted to remind people to think about their mothers, their grandmothers, and other important female figures in their lives as real people, celebrate the accomplishments that they were able to make, considering that they grew up in a different time, perhaps when not as many choices and rights were enjoyed by women. So in other words, don't look at them with present day eyes, but appreciate and celebrate what they accomplished in past times.
Do either of you want to add to that?
I only want to respond to the man who just called and to say that it's remarkable that he could recover from that kind of neglect and find a home where he was truly loved by another woman who became a good mother for him.
Maggie?
No, I don't have much to add to all of that, but I really enjoy having had the opportunity to talk about this today.
All right. Well, thank you all three for being here today. The book is called Compassionate Journey, Honoring Our Mother's Stories. I know you all speak, and you, Cheryl, lead some writing groups. You all have book signings, and you read from your books.
Yes.
And is there anything coming up that we should know about?
Yes, we do have a reading June 6th in Clinton, Maine, a beautiful little historic library. We will be in Berwick at the end of October. We do have some things in the works. We have a website by the name of Compassionate Journey, we do have a lot of stuff.
And we'll post things if we have other readings. They'll be posted on the website or given. We have a Facebook page as well.
Let me wrap up just by asking, what do you hope that this book will do?
We hope that I hope it will offer other women the opportunity to begin to see their mothers separate women from them and to look at their mothers as individuals in the context of their lives.
And you're nodding, Cheryl.
I just want it to start a much needed conversation.
And I would say that I hope it brings peace. One of the callers asked, why would I want to, or you might have asked, why would someone want to go to all the trouble of going into this? And I would say for the peace that it can bring you and the freedom.
Yes.
Well, thank you all so much for being here today. Maggie Butler, award-winning writer and retired psychotherapist, Cheryl Gillespie, retired English teacher and writer, and Jane Sloven, a writer, psychotherapist, and retired attorney. They are all authors in Compassionate Journey, Honoring Our Mother's Stories. Lucy Suchek ran the board today. Isaac Merson took your calls. You can find past editions of Maine Calling at mainecalling.org. Today's program will be rebroadcast tonight at 8. Our theme song was composed by Mike Jandreau. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.